Hello and welcome to the Anti-Football Podcast. My name is Chris. As always, I am joined by Harry. And I'm not going to piss about like we have for the past two episodes talking about conspiracy theories. Just get straight into the football chat because there's a lot of football to talk about, isn't there, Harry? I mean, I've got a lot to talk about on this first game, but I'll let you have the first words because there's a lot of controversy going on in this first game. There's a lot of decisions that could have gone either way, and I'm probably going to look at it from a certain bias. So I'll let you give me your thoughts first on Burnley 1, Arsenal 1.
I think you defended very well. When you went behind pretty early on, you responded very well. But there was a moment in the second half which the ref wrongly viewed it to be handball, and that's always a grey area now, isn't it? Yeah, so, and he gave Peters a red card, so he was pretty sure of it, but thankfully VAR did overturn that decision.
Yeah, I think he was definitely very keen to get his card out after the other handball incident.
I don't really recall that.
Do you not?
I have a terrible memory.
Oh, I mean, you know, even as a Burnley fan, I can admit that it should have been handball. It were Peters again. It were Pepe out on right-hand side. And Peters' arm were, like, outstretched. Yeah, that.
I don't agree with... I think it's... It was outstretched, wasn't it? Yeah.
If I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be absolutely fuming that that wasn't given. I'd definitely think we've got away with one there.
Yeah, but when you see someone's arm outstretched, could you effectively just boot the ball with their arm and then get a penalty?
Well, yeah, because if it's outstretched like that, and I mean, you know, especially when you consider some of the penalties that have been given this season, you know what I mean? Like, there's definitely been penalties given for a lot less.
Yeah, the handball rule is just so annoying.
Well, it just changes from week to week, and, like, you know, I mean, last season it were offsides. And, I mean, there's still some offsides this season, but it's mainly been this pissing handball rule. You know, it changes from week to week, and no one knows what the rules are anymore. Apparently, it wasn't given because it was too close, but I thought that wasn't a factor. Yeah, it's no one knows what the rules are anymore. It's definitely poor. Yeah, and if I was an Arsenal fan, to be completely honest with you, I'd be absolutely fuming that we didn't win this, especially given that they conceded probably the most bizarre goal I've ever seen us score.
Well, I mean, we saw it in the Olympiacos game. Them pissing about at the back is costly, as, you know, they can't do it. They're not a team that's capable of doing it, and we saw that. Xhaka being very deep in his own box. Why would you? I don't get why you'd try and pass to when there's a striker looming. I just hash it away.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, between our Vidra's goal against Leicester, this goal here, and the first goal that we scored last night against Everton, we've actually sort of become more of a high-pressing team, especially in the opposition half, not so much when the other team has possession in our own half, but when we're in the opposition half, we do tend to press a lot higher than we have done in previous seasons. And I think these past few games have shown that because it's led to goals. And this is a prime example here. You know, like, you know, I was saying to my dad at the time, also watching the game with him, you know, it's all right if you're Man City, because you can play it out the back. You've got the players to do it. But if you don't have the players to do it, then why would you try it? You know, you've got to play to your team's strengths. And I don't think that that's something that Arteta has necessarily done this season. I think last season, I think he did it well, because he came in, he changed to the five at the back formation. He made Arsenal solid at the back. They were hard to break down. Yes, they were poor to watch at times, but they managed to get results. I mean, you know, they're getting points against Man City and Chelsea. You know, they won an FA Cup with that. So, you know, you can't really criticise that too much. But I think this season they've tried to be more expansive and it hasn't really worked because he's trying too much considering the plays that he has.
I assume that's one of the things he learned under Guardiola. But Guardiola has ball playing centre backs. He doesn't have David Luiz and, you know, Saka being makeshift left back sometimes.
Mm.
Just poor players like that.
Mm.
Yeah. I will say, though, that probably was Arsenal's probably brightest spark this game was Saka. I mean, you know, he got very close to the edge of being sent off, I will admit. You know, he made quite a few tackles whilst he was on, quite a few fouls, sorry, whilst he was on a booking. But, you know, again, he's shown in this game and this season that he is definitely a very bright youth prospect. You know, people are going to say, oh, it's an English bias, but I personally think he's miles better than Martinelli.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, he's proven to be more versatile. You know, he can play on the left, on the right, down the middle, at left back. He's just been brilliant for him, especially this season as well. He's sort of come into his own. The Aubameyang goal... go on.
I'll be ruling out Martinez's season and Europa League last season. I mean, this season he's been riddled with injury, hasn't he? So...
Hmm. Yeah, he has definitely been unlucky as Martinelli. I think he was only cheap as well for Arsenal. I swear, he only cost them
like some small Brazil team, like Itasande or something.
Yeah.
So something with I.
Hmm. Yeah. So it was, you know, pretty cheap. And I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I'd much rather have someone like Martinelli than someone like Willian, for example.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I'm sure as a Chelsea fan, you're going to agree with that as well. Yeah, I can imagine. It was, just, you know, a bizarre goal to concede from, you know, basically nothing. It was just Arsenal being architects of their own downfall, and then, you know, we held on well, and Arsenal couldn't break us down. And at the end, you know, at the end of the day, a point's a good result in this game. You know, and Arsenal, you know, whilst it looked like they were potentially starting to, you know, go on a bit of a run, you know, start winning some games again. You know, you have the win against Leeds, the win against Benfica, the win against Leicester, but again, you know, these are the games that they have to be winning if they want to get European football next season. You know, the North London derby today is going to be crucial for them. And, you know, their only route to European football next season is probably through the Europa League. Because I can't see them finishing above Spurs or Villa or Liverpool or Everton.
No, certainly not. Especially since they've got games in hand as well.
Mm.
Although Everton had a questionable game yesterday, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, definitely. But is there else you want to add on to this game, or are we to move on?
Move on.
Right, we'll go to Sheffield United losing 2-0 to Southampton. That's their that's their 22nd loss of the season out of 28 games. You know, it was just typical Sheffield United performance this season, really. They weren't that bad. They created a couple of good chances, but at the end of the day, they were second best. And this ended up being Chris Wilder's final game in charge of Sheffield United. What were your thoughts, Harry, first on the game and then on Chris Wilder leaving Sheffield United, his departure?
I thought it was very lucky to have been kept at two, to be honest. Two was kept it respectable because Saints forced five saves out of Ramsdale. Sheffield United's defence didn't look as adept as they've usually been. And then with Chris Wilder going, it was a mutual decision, so...
Well, they say it's a mutual decision, but from the context surrounding it, it seems like mutual decision is code word for sacked.
Yeah, I think that would have riled up fans. Well, I think that was because... I think he's left, but he, you know, sort of accepted his sacking because him and the board haven't got along because in January he wanted funding and, you know, the owner said no. Mm. And then there's been... I don't feel like the big signings that Sheffield United made in the summer were his decisions, the likes of a Ryan Brewster or a Ollie Burke. But players like Ampadu and certainly Sanderberg last year in January certainly his sort of signings because they were like tall and, you know, really fit into the play style of them.
Yeah.
Whereas getting these smaller, fast, you know, these players that like to get in behind really doesn't suit Sheffield United's play style. That. You know, I assume that's where the breakdown in communication started.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, you don't know who's, you know, been mainly behind the transfers. I don't know how Sheffield United runs behind the scenes. But, you know, the big money signings have been flops. You know, you're spending £32 million on Ryan Brewster and... He's been awful. There's no way to say it. Like, you know, he had a brilliant season last season, or last half season in the Championship. You know, and he looked like a striker. Maybe not a £32 million striker, but he looked like a striker who would have done really well for Sheffield United. But, you know, no goals and no assists in the league in 20 appearances. Like, that's just awful. Like,
I wouldn't say all of their big signings were flops because I wouldn't put Ramsdale on there personally.
I mean, the thing is with Ramsdale, he's been all right, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's been good either.
Well, he's played 8 games less than Henderson already and made 4 more saves, so he's having to work harder. That being said, he's conceded 11 more goals and only has 2 clean sheets compared to 13. And I think that does feed into the fact that you don't have Jack O'Connell. And that would have lightened the workload because they were conceding something like 13 shots a game. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're all on target, but that's a lot to concede.
Yeah. It's not like they haven't spent money. Like, I mean, you know, you can understand, for example, if Ralph Hasenhüttl left Southampton because they weren't spending money, for example, or not necessarily now after the takeover, but before the takeover, if Sean Dyche left Burnley because they haven't been spending money. Sheffield United have spent money. Now, you know, again, like I say, I don't know whether they were Wilder's signings, whether they were someone else's signings. But they have spent money and it hasn't worked out. So I'm not going to you know, solely blame the board because I don't know what's been going on. And I will say that, you know, he probably... I can understand both sides, really. I can understand why Wilder wanted more funding because, you know, they needed it if they were going to have any chance of survival. But from the businessman's perspective, you know, they're going down. They can't be pumping more money into the club when they're going to lose it. And, you know, as well, at the same time, you've got to sort of think that there's... If you're, like, a top-level championship club, which is the sort of players that Sheffield United need to stay in the league, you know, why would you want to go to Sheffield United? Because there are, you know, they're 12 points adrift of safety. They're comfortably bottom of the league. You know, if you're at a team like a Brentford or a Swansea or a Reading or, you know, even a Barnsley, like, why would you want to go to Sheffield United, who are looking like a sinking ship? So I can understand both sides, really. The Sheffield United fans have made their voice clear on whose side they're taking. I mean, it's just a bit of a mess, this situation, all over. Because I think Wilder would have walked the league next season if he'd have stayed in Championship. I think he'd have absolutely pissed the league, you know. You're looking at when Burnley got relegated in 2015, they kept the faith with Sean Dyche and he won them the league going 23 undefeated in the second half of the season. You're looking at this season, Norwich, who'd just been relegated, stuck with Daniel Farker and now they're 7 points clear of Watford with a game in hand at the top of the table, looking like they're going to come back up, you know. They've, you know, clubs... I can understand why clubs would want to sack the manager when they're going down or when they're in a relegation fight or whatever. We've got to consider, you know, who would Sheffield United be able to get that would keep them in a better position going forward? You know, Wilder knows the club inside out, you know, and, you know, I don't know much or really anything at all about this new bloke who they've brought in. I can't remember his name, to be completely honest with you. Oh. It's like Paul Hickenbottom or something. Yeah, yeah, that's his name.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're bringing in Jason Tindall as backroom staff. Like, yeah, it's just, you know... Like, how is he going to be in a better position to keep you up? How is he going to be in a better position to get you back up next season? He's not. And, you know, I really think the board are going to regret isolating, alienating, whatever you want to say. They're going to regret pushing Chris Wilder away from the club. Because Chris Wilder can easily get a job anywhere else.
Oh,
100%. Like, well, I say anywhere else. You know, like, someone like a Palace, for example.
Ironically think he'd do a brilliant job at Arsenal.
Well, he won't go to Arsenal. Like, it's the same with Sean Dyche. Like, the top clubs, and when I say top clubs, I don't mean, you know, in the top four, I mean like big clubs. They don't want someone like a Wilder or a Dyche. They want the fashionable managers. I genuinely think Scott Parker is more likely to become Arsenal manager than Dyche or Wilder. You know, it's the same reason that Brian Clough was never England manager.
They'll love that, an ex-Spurs player.
I genuinely do think that. Like,
there would be uproar.
Well, I mean, you know, they did sign Sol Campbell.
Yeah, but ex-Fulham, Chelsea, West Ham and Spurs player.
Well, you know, maybe not Scott Parker, but that sort of manager, you know, Graham Potter then is another one. You know, they don't, you know, the likes of Dyche, the likes of Wilder, they're unfashionable. It's the same reason Brian Clough was never England manager. You know, like,
why would you want to manage England?
Well, you know, if England wanted Brian Clough, they could have got Brian Clough, especially back then, you know, not necessarily now, but like, Because back then, being a club manager was still a big job. What was that?
If Scotland wanted Ferguson, they'd get Ferguson. Or if Spain wanted Guardiola, they'd get Guardiola.
What the?
What you've said.
Well, yeah, but it's completely different now to back when Brian Clough were manager.
I thought international football was always sort of like poo-pooed away.
Well, I mean, you know, what's his face? Don Revie. He won league with Leeds, and then he got pulled away from the job by England.
Yes.
You know, like, nowadays it's completely different because club football is probably more valuable than international football, but back then it wasn't. That's what I'm saying. Have you seen The Damned United?
The what?
The Damned United, you know the film?
No.
Oh, I'd definitely recommend it. It's very good. Sheen does a good Brian Clough.
Which Sheen is this? Charlie Sheen?
What? Charlie Sheen? I'm just imagining Charlie Sheen being Brian Clough. No, it's Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen? I have never heard of a Michael Sheen.
You've never heard of Michael Sheen?
I've heard of Martin Sheen.
You know, the Welsh actor. He was in thingy on Netflix recently. Not Netflix, Amazon Prime. Oh, what's it called? Fucking Good Omens. He was in that.
Good. What the hell was that?
It's series on Amazon Prime. I'm trying to think. What else was he in?
That good, huh?
No, he is a good actor. He is a good actor.
I'm just going through his Wikipedia. Thing is, I don't watch many films.
Oh, that's it. It was in Frost Nixon.
Not seen that.
It's good that he'd like that.
The only thing that I've seen that he's been in is The Simpsons, and he was a voice actor, so.
Well, he's done a lot of films as well. I think he was in the thingy, one at Tron Films.
Yeah, I've not seen that. I've gone through his Wikipedia, and Simpsons is the only thing I recognise.
Really? Out of the films as well?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Alright. No, he does do a good thingy. He does a good Brian Clough. He does take a good Brian Clough. Alright. Anyway, we've gone off track a little bit. Yeah, I mean, is there all else you want to say about Sheffield United Southampton? I mean, it's another unlucky injury for Danny Ings as well, who's that could be his Euros hopes gone basically with this injury, because he was probably on the fringes of the squad already, and this injury definitely won't have helped him.
I wouldn't have put him in contention, to be honest.
Would you not?
No. For me, the three I pick are Kane, Calvert-Lewin, Vardy. Well, not Vardy, so Ollie Watkins. Then on the fringes would be Bamford, Wilson. I guess Ings, then, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
Rashford a striker.
Well, I mean, he can play there, can't he? Like, you know.
Well, in that case, I'd pick him.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, between, you know, Kane, Calvert-Lewin, Sterling, Sancho, Rashford, Grealish, you can class there potentially. Maybe even Saka.
Yeah.
In terms of like a forward line, that's probably what he's going to go with. Because, I mean, very rarely do you see, you know, three out-and-out strikers going.
Why? I'd play a 4-4-2.
Would you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fair enough. And they call me the Brexit one.
No, just for England.
Yeah. You know, 4-4-2 isn't even Brexit football, you know. It's invented by the Hungarians.
Ferenc Puskás.
Yeah, like them lot. Like, what, and they brought it over here to replace our WM formation.
Why? What were we playing?
Oh, all our teams used to play WM.
What does that mean?
Oh, right. So it was one centre back, two wing backs, two defensive midfielders, two wingers, an attacking midfielder, and two strikers. So it looked like a WM.
Okay. Or a 3-2-1-2.
No. Not like a 3-2. Well, no, it'd be more. Actually, no, it wouldn't be. It'd be a 3. It'd be a 3-2-2-3. My mistake.
Alright.
Because on pitch, you look like a WM. It's sort of similar to what Pep plays when he's in possession at City, but just all the time.
Okay.
So, Pep Guardiola plays Brexit ball, is what I'm trying to get at.
Okay.
Anyway, we're going to move on to Brighton-Leicester. Yeah, I mean, Brighton managed to get the early goal through Adam Lallana, who I'm a big Adam Lallana fan. I still think he's a great midfielder. He's had a tough time throughout his career and this season with injuries. But when he's on top form, he is quality. But, you know, Leicester, you know, dominated the ball, had quite a few good chances. And eventually Iheanacho broke through with his second in two games for Leicester. And then Daniel Amati, of all people, managing to bag the winner.
Terrible goalkeeping.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, I'm a fan of Sanchez. I think he's a pretty good midfielder. I think he's a pretty good goalkeeper. Far better than Ryan. I think he's definitely a big upgrade. But he should have been able to punch that out 100%.
Props to Amati being in the right place at the right time and reacting so quickly.
Oh yeah, 100%. Especially considering that you know,
you'd expect
Oh yeah, and the fact that it's Amati as well, if it was someone like Vardy or, you know, Tielemans there, you know, you'd expect him to finish. But, you know, a defender can go either way. All right. What did you think of Nuno Tavares as well? Because if I'm not mistaken, this is his first Premier League start for Leicester. He played about 70 minutes. His contract's apparently coming out at the end of the season. But Leicester are keen to extend it. Tavares wants more first-team football, so he's not sure whether he's going to sign it yet. But from like your limited sample size, what do you think of Tavares?
Very physically imposed in midfield. And got a brilliant shot on him because he smacked the post. Yeah, I think he'd be a good destroyer in midfield and definitely could do a job getting some, you know, long shots and, you know, not afraid to have a go.
I think he's very similar to Wilfred and Didi type, you know, but he's just pushing forward a bit more. So, you know, I'd be interested to see if they work together as a double pivot. I don't necessarily think that it was the best option in this game, especially considering, you know, they're playing Brighton, who are an inferior team, even with Leicester's injuries. But yeah, I like Tavares. I think he's a decent little midfielder. And he's definitely got a lot of potential. And like you said, yeah, definitely he's got a hell of a shot on him. Yeah, I think he's a decent little midfielder.
Yeah, I mean, for the 70 minutes we saw, yeah, definitely. I thought he could have definitely played the rest of the game because he was one of the more imposing in the final third.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely probably the most dynamic of the three midfielders, I'll say.
What's the next game?
It's
skipping that, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's not really much to talk about in terms of a 0-0 between West Brom and Newcastle. So we'll go to bloody Fulham beating Liverpool, and that is, oh, that was, sorry, Liverpool's sixth loss at Anfield in a row in the league. That's never happened in the history of Liverpool. Not the city, the club. And yeah, it was just poor again from Liverpool. Yeah, I mean, I just can't wrap my head around how a team so good last season has become so shit this season. And you can't say injuries because every team's had injuries.
Burnout, and everyone's got them soused. That's my theory. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, they just look a shadow of the former self. And I don't want to, you know, keep banging on about the same drum because, you know, we've been saying this basically all season that Liverpool have looked a shadow of the former self. So I don't want to, you know, keep on going over the same points. But what I will say is that, you know, it's trying to change stuff up, Klopp, and just nothing's working, you know. I mean, Salah had an absolute stinker today. Like, you know, it's... And I don't think it's necessarily like a lack of effort or anything. They're just not... The tactics just aren't working this season. Like, everything they're trying, it's just not coming off. I think, you know, teams realise that, you know, Liverpool can't break down a low block. Simple as that. You know, you saw it against us, you saw it against Brighton, and now you're seeing it against Fulham. Like, you know, and I mean, it's not like they're losing to Man City and United and Chelsea and Leicester at home. Three of those six home games were losing to Burnley, Brighton and Fulham. That is absolutely shocking, no matter what you want to say about injuries or whatever. Like, it's absolutely shocking.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, they've only scored one goal, haven't they? One goal in those six games. I mean, so the blame has to be not only on the defence, but the front line, because not being able to score against a Fulham or Burnley, you know, the other lot, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's so bad. Like, I mean, you know, we were talking about, you know, past couple of episodes, you know, well, that's Liverpool's top four hopes gone. they might not even qualify for Europe at all this season. You know, you're looking at, if you say seventh place gets you Europe, is it the Europa Conference next season? Is that, does that start next season?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So if you say seventh place is for this Europa League 2, this Europa Conference League, and then fifth and sixth are Europa League spots, you know, Liverpool would be lucky to finish seventh at this rate, to be completely honest with you. I think the only way they're going to get Champions League next season is through winning the Champions League this season. And yeah, they've just been like 9 losses in 28 games. I just can't wrap my head around it. Like,
I find it funny.
Oh no, definitely it's funny, but it's also baffling. Like, you know, if you'd have told me 12 months ago that in 12 months' time West Ham will be 5 points ahead of Liverpool with a game in hand, you know, I'd have had you bloody committed. Like, it's just mad. Like, and you know, they just look a broken team. Klopp himself looks broken. Like, I mean, there were rumours of him going to the German national team because Joachim Löw, I believe that's how you say it, he's stepping down after the Euros. But Klopp's come out and said basically that that's not going to happen. He's got a contract at Liverpool up until 2024, so you know, his contract isn't running out anytime soon.
No, well, I don't think responsibility lies on him, it lies on the players and definitely the board for the lack of, you know, good investments. And they're, you know, giving him a budget and then of what. How much do they have this season?
How much have they spent this season?
Yeah.
Well, they spent, what was it, 40 million on Jota, 25 million on Thiago, about 10 million on Tsimikas, and then about, what were it, like just under a million on Ben Davies?
Yeah.
And then they got in Kabak on loan.
Yeah. So, just over 76 million then?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, especially considering the money that they brought in from player sales. You know, they sold Lovren for 10 million. They sold Hoover for nearly 9 million or something like that. You know, they sold Brewster for, what were it, like 32 million? What?
And then they got players like Lallana off their wage book.
Yeah.
Yeah, just not good enough.
No, it's not. You know, I mean, when you've won the Premier League, you've won the Champions League, you know, you should be spending more money. Like, I'm not someone who, you know, says, or, you know, you need to spend £100 million every season. Like, you know, that you can succeed without spending stupid amounts of money. Like, you know, spending money for the sake of money is stupid. But it was clear to everyone that Liverpool needed to spend money. They needed squad depth. And it just didn't happen. Like, and, you know, they've ended up paying the price for it. They might not even get European football next season, which, you know, again, if you'd have told me that 12 months ago, I'd have thought you were mental.
Mm. Yeah. They're going to need a major investment in the summer. And possibly a shift in who's in charge or the transfers, because it's been very poor. I mean, signing Tsimikas, and he's only played one game. What was the point in signing him?
Well, he was brought in to be a backup left back because they didn't have one at all, basically, last season. I mean, they ended up playing James Milner as the backup left back. So I can understand that. You know, they needed more of those signings, really. They needed more squad depth, more players like that.
One game, though.
You what?
He's only played one game, so it's not really a backup, is it?
Well, yeah, it is, because if Robertson gets injured, Shimikas steps in.
Yeah, but he's not going to be match ready, is he?
Well, no, but he's still, you know, he's still a good quality player. Like, and he's still, you know, they should have bought in a Shimikas in at centre back in summer. Like, they started the season with three centre backs.
Yeah. Yeah, they were doomed before, yeah.
And, you know, with, you know, the likes of Salah, Mane, Firmino coming into the primes of their career, you know, you'd think that, you know, potentially if some of the biggest clubs came calling, especially if Liverpool don't qualify for Europe, you know, they definitely would be tempted. I mean, you know, Barcelona's probably off the table because they're financially in a mess at the moment. But, you know, if a club like, you know, Real or Bayern Munich or PSG or Juventus, you know, if clubs like that came in for Salah, Mane, you know, you think the players would probably, I'm not going to say be keen because I don't know, you know, what they're thinking. But they definitely probably consider that move. And I think Liverpool could be backed into a corner this summer when it comes to player sales if they don't qualify for Europe.
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's where the best players want to be, is Europe.
Especially when you consider, you know, Salah's 28... Mane's 28, Firmino's 29, you know, so they're in, you know, that's when they should be at their peaks, you know, winning stuff. Right.
Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to the end of a streak?
Yeah, I mean, it just had to be a Bruno Fernandes penalty, didn't it? I mean, it's just funny. It's just funny that that was what ended the bloody 900 game winning streak that Man City had. Like, oh. I mean, oh, it was just funny. It was just very funny. You what?
You'd bet your house on that happening.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But in terms of overall, though, I think, you know, it was a really good performance from Man United. You know, Martial led the line well. I think Luke Shaw, he had a good game, obviously, you know, even besides the goal, he had a good game. I think Maguire, I've given him a lot of stick, but he did have a decent game this game. And Henderson as well, he had a really good game as well, you know, making six saves. Yeah, it was just, you know, a typical United performance this season. You know, they sat back. They bored their time, and they hit City on the counter attack. They were clinical, and at the end of the day, City couldn't break them down. And you know, it was just a brilliantly executed game plan. It was a brilliantly executed game plan from Ole.
Mm-hmm. Still penalty merchants. And Bruno FC.
But it works. It works. So, and I mean, it was a penalty. It wasn't like it wasn't a penalty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was definitely a striker's challenge, as they say, or from Jesus.
Why so early in the game are you trying to get the ball back like that? Dumbass.
Yeah, exactly. Like 2 minutes in. Like, Aye. But yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, Man City are still going to run away with the league. But, you know, it was, you know, that's only their third loss all season. They've only conceded 21 goals. It's definitely been an impressive season, but, you know, just as impressive, I think it's, you know, fair to say, have been United. You know, they're second top scorers in the league. They're currently second in the league. They've only lost four games all season. You know, it's definitely been a good season for United, especially if they can stay where they are in the league. You know, if they finish second, that's a really good season for United. I think their season, I'm not going to say it's flown under the radar a little bit, but I don't think, especially if it says as it is, I don't think that it'll be getting as much attention as it has, probably because City's run away with it.
Yeah.
I think it's similar to the season where Mourinho got them second when City ran away with it. You know, it was...
trophies will come a second.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying you do. But I'm saying it's still a really good season for them. Like, it's just being overshadowed. Like, to be the best of the rest, you know, that's a good achievement. I definitely do think that, and it's definitely, it's a really good foundation to build on.
Yeah, but it does show the disparity between Man City and Man United, how far off they are. The City are only going to get stronger because they're going to get tons more investment, and I assume they'll be looking towards getting a new striker. That's even more goals that they're going to get.
Well, yeah, but we already knew that. It wasn't, you know, like coming into this season, we thought United and City would be on similar levels.
Yeah, I just don't see United closing that gap. They're not as attractive as they used to be.
Well, obviously they're not as attractive as they used to be under Ferguson, but they're still an attractive club. I mean, Man United's one of the biggest clubs in the world, and they are at a point where they're consistently qualifying for the Champions League.
Well, they're in the Europa League at the moment.
Oh, yeah, but they're still qualified for Champions League last season.
They did, yeah.
Yeah.
Set in stone yet, but...
Oh, yeah, no, obviously we're all speculating, but, you know, if it stays as it is what I'm saying. And personally, I only think United are a couple of positions away from, you know, pushing on, you know. Imagine if they had a centre-half as good as Stones or Diaz has been this season. I think they'd definitely be up there, Man United. That's just been their problem this season, has been too many draws from conceding soft goals.
Well, I think they need a good centre-back and a good striker. Mm. Like a proper striker, not, you know, putting Rashford out on the wing.
Someone like, I don't know, someone like an Edison Cavani, for example.
But, yeah, but he can't really play 90 minutes. And they're very, very reliant on Bruno.
Well, I think that's more to do with Pogba's injury as well. I think when Pogba plays, there is more freedom given to Bruno because there's someone else in that midfield what offers that creative output. And I think if they had someone like a, you know, a younger version of Nemanja Matic, I think that'd really help the other midfielder be, you know, more expressive. Because, you know, when you're looking at, you know, you've got Fred and McTominay who usually fill in that Matic role. And both of them, you know, like to explore forward. They like to, you know, push forward, the sort of box-to-box types. You don't really have a midfielder besides Matic that just likes to sit in front of that back four. You know, and that was one of the reasons why Man City have been so successful over the past few years. it's because of Fernandinho. And I think United really could do with their own version of Fernandinho.
They sort of have it in a McTominay.
Yeah, but McTominay's, shown this season that when he gets forward, he's actually really effective as well. I mean, he's got, quite a few goals this season, McTominay.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's pretty decent defensively.
Mm.
He knows when to draw a foul.
Yeah.
He's a very physical player as well.
Mm. Yeah, I like McTominay. But I just think it would be a shame to sort of pigeonhole him, you just sit in front of that back four, don't go forward, when he's got 7 goals this season.
Oh, right, I see what you mean.
I feel like that would be a waste of his talent going forward, is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, they kind of make him do that when Fred's on, don't they?
Hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why they need someone like Matic who can just sit in front of that back four and let him, players like him, players like Pogba, have more freedom.
Mm, I agree.
Because, as much as he hasn't been given a chance this season, Donny van de Beek isn't that type of player. He's been a really poor signing. I think he's been totally mismanaged as Van der Beek. For £40 million as well, he didn't exactly come cheap. To say how good he was at Ajax, yeah, he's definitely been a poor signing.
He signed, they lose their game, and he's like, yeah, can I go back to my old club?
Yeah.
Knew it was going to be downhill from there.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, is there what else you want to add on to Manchester Derby or?
No.
No, right. Okay, well, we'll move on to the Spurs Palace game. What a performance it was from Harry Kane. I mean, 2 goals and 2 assists. He's proving why he's one of the, best strikers in the world at the moment. But also, I think it's important to point out that it looks like Gareth Bale is showing glimpses of him being the player that he was when he first joined Real Madrid. He's in excellent form recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think he's got, 6-6? Was 6 in his last 6?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And he got a brace against you 2 weeks prior.
Yeah, you'd have to remind me about that.
They say good things coming too. So him and Kane both got very good performance. I think Spurs absolutely dominated Palace, but the fact Palace did make them panic a bit just before the half after, getting that Benteke header. Obviously, Mourinho had to change the team talk and they came out firing in the second half.
Mm. Yeah, they were absolutely clinical, were Spurs, which, is something that you expect, really, when you've got, such a lethal striker up front. Palace again, they just look poor. And I mean, they are, it happens every season with Palace, really, it seems like. They get to a point where, they've got enough points to stay up, because Palace aren't going to go down. I mean, they're sat on 37 points, like 11 points clear of the relegation zone with 9 games to go. It would take an absolute, it would take divine intervention for Palace to get relegated at this point. So they're not going to go down. The players know that. And it seems like, again, it's a cliche, but it seems like they're on the beach already. And it happens every season as well. It happened last season. I mean, I swear last season they lost like the last 7 games in a row or something. Like,
Jesus. Do you think it's Roy Hodgson's last season?
Well, when does his contract expire? I swear, didn't he sign a year extension recently?
Oh, so he could be around for a bit longer. Okay, then. I thought he was going to retire.
Oh, no, he's his contract runs out at the end of the year. Yeah, it's a tough one, really, because, you know, I don't think Hodgson... Well, he's been good for him as Hodgson. I mean, you know, consider who they had before they brought in Hodgson. They had bloody Frank de Boer and, you know, lost his 4 games in charge and then was sacked. And I remember, you know, when they brought Roy Hodgson in, I was thinking, what the hell are they doing? You know, they're bringing in the man who absolutely disgraced England at 2 tournaments. Like, he's clearly lost it as a manager. But to be fair to him, he's come in and he's done a good job at Palace. Will it be his last season? I don't know. Really, I don't think anyone knows, really. I think he's good enough to have another year, definitely. But it's up to him, ultimately. I mean, I'm sure the Palace board would be happy to have him around for another year. But it's up to him, ultimately, whether he decides to renew his contract or not. He's been very coy about it in the media. He's sort of deflected questions about it. But yeah, I mean, gun to my head, I would say he signs on for another year. I don't think he has any reason to leave. But, you know, I don't know anything. I don't know about the, you know, the inner workings of the club. So I could be completely wrong. Could be completely off base.
Did you get that meme reference?
I didn't hear you at all. What did you say?
The inner machinations of my mind are an enigma.
Yes, I did get that. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, it's just not... I think he'll stay. But, you know, again, his sides do tend to get to, you know, around about that 40-point mark and just be on the proverbial beach. So, yeah, that's definitely something that they have to work on.
Yeah, it's once they reach that 40 points. It's a pedal, you know, work's all done. Just, yeah.
Right, so, yeah, have you got all else you want to add on to this game, or we can move on?
No, I'm good.
Right, I mean, I'll let you take us through your thoughts on the Chelsea-Everton game, because I'm sure you'll have a bit to say about it.
Not really. A near faultless display. Havertz showed glimpses of, you know, a player that we expected to see. I mean, may not have scored, but he had a hand in both goals. He forced the own goal for Godfrey. Then he had a goal disallowed for a handball, which I don't believe was handball. And then he was fouled for the penalty, which he very cleverly done by rounding Pickford and, you know, forcing the error, which Jorginho put away. And I thought it was a very brilliant display. And we kept their chances to a minimum. I think they only had like one shot on target. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely a very dominant display from Chelsea. Again, somewhat that, you know, Tuchel was brought to this Chelsea team is, you know, keeping calm on the ball, being able to dominate possession, having, you know, the body of numbers, you know, in, you know, the opposition, not the opposition half, sorry, in your own half, you know, just keeping calm on the ball. And he's done that well. And, you know, Chelsea deserved the win. They probably deserved to win by more. And, yeah, I thought it was, you know, very good performance to just negate this Everton team, because they went into this game in, you know, good form. I mean, they've won 3 out of the last 3 coming into this game. And, yeah, you know, it's just been... It was just a dominant performance. I mean, there's not really too much to say, to be completely honest with you. I think Chelsea really suits this 3-at-the-back formation. And, yeah, like, I think the only thing really to say is that it's another game without Werner scoring in the league. And he just seems so low on confidence at the moment.
Yeah. I don't know what goes on with Everton. Like, they win these really important games, and when they're right on the verge of a top four, they bottle it.
Mm.
Maybe, but they definitely don't have the squad capabilities to do Champions League because it's too thin a squad.
Mm. So
they have been told to sort of hold back until. I don't know. That would be a rather bizarre request, though. And I thought the way that Ancelotti handled the Iwobi situation was very good.
Yeah, 100%. I think Ancelotti's really come in and, you know, he's just done well. He's really just done well. Yeah, but I mean, you know, it again, you know, like you were saying, it just feels like Everton are always just failing to kick themselves onto that next level. You know, and this season was the best chance they have to do it. You know, probably going to finish above Liverpool. You know, Spurs and Arsenal having poor seasons. You know, this was definitely their chance to, you know, finally break into that top four. But they're not doing it. Like, you know, you've got West Ham above them at the moment, which, you know, it's not great considering how much money Everton have spent, you know, over the past few seasons. They've spent loads, you know. So when Arsenal, when Liverpool, when Spurs are all finishing below you, you need to be breaking into that top four. And they're probably not going to do it this season.
And you'd expect Spurs, Arsenal and Liverpool to definitely improve next season. So, you know, Everton needs to be very wise in how they invest in the summer.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
They need to be looking at improving squad depth. I think the 11 they've got, outside of maybe a decent centre midfielder, is decent enough.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you saw that at the start of the season, you know, when they went on like a 10-game winning run or something like that, in all competitions. They were, you know, they had a brilliant first team. You know, you had the front three of Rodriguez, Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison. You know, you had Doucouré, Alan and Gomez in midfield. You know, they're great. But in terms of the actual squad, you know, it's not good. You know, I'm not a fan of Tom Davies, personally. I think Sigurdsson's past it. I think Bernard is fine, but he's not at the level where they want to be. You know, like, in terms of depth, they're not where they want to be. You know, Sigurdsson is not a top four player. Bernard isn't a top four player. Davies isn't a top four player.
Yeah. Well, they wanted to sell Bernard on the final day, but I think the time had passed for them to get it done.
Hmm.
I think you're going to go to, like, Shakhtar, I think. I'm not sure.
Hmm. We came from Shakhtar to Everton, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because that's basically the first place that all the Brazilians go to in Europe is Shakhtar Donetsk. I don't know why. But, yeah, it's... I mean, I could see that, definitely. I think the problem is, I think he's on a massive contract. I think he's on like $100,000 a week. So, you know, unless he's willing to take a wage cut, there's not many clubs what would be willing to take on someone like Bernard on $100,000 a week.
What? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. Shall we move on to the next game?
Going to West Ham and Leeds. Speaking of West Ham, actually. Yeah, and I mean, you know, Lingard gets another goal. I mean, yeah, it were from a scuff penalty. But he's just continuing to score. He's been in great form ever since he's arrived at West Ham. Yeah, he's just been a revelation, really, for West Ham. I mean, he's got, you know, 4 goals and an assist for West Ham in his first 6 games. And, yeah, I mean, what an inspired signing that was, really.
Yeah, certainly. Moyes obviously saw something in Lingard from his years ago at Man United.
I was about to say, didn't Lingard break through under Moyes?
Yeah. And maybe they have some sort of connection in how, you know, Moyes is able to bring out the best in Lingard, because certainly when he's on the field, he's one of the most eccentric and dynamic one out there. You know, he's certainly a threat when he's going forward.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah, he's been... Yeah, he's been brilliant for pissing... Oh, West Ham. Why was that not in my head? He's been brilliant for West Ham this season. You know, and I think alongside that Suchet-Rice double pivot, I think that midfield has been great for him. And they're definitely, you know... Well, it's in their own hands in terms of the top four push, because they've got 2 games in hand on Chelsea and they're only 3 points behind them. What's been different? What's been the difference, really? Because they haven't gone out and made too many signings of West Ham. I mean, you know, they got Benrahma, Dawson and Koufal in the summer, and they end up getting Lingard in January. I mean, they must have had a massive impact, because, you know, the difference between last season and this season has just been immense.
100%. Also, when Benrahma plays, he's another bright spark in their attack. He's another player they got.
Mm-hmm.
Haller, to a certain extent, but obviously when he's only got 2 goals and however many appearances, they kind of had to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
When he scored, they were very impressive goals.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, I didn't mind Allaire, but I think, you know, for £40 million, I mean, you know, they could have gotten better, I'll say that.
Jared Bowen, another bright spark.
Mm.
Aaron Cresswell is probably the Prem's best left back this season.
I mean, he's definitely up there, I will say that. He has been, you know, he's been brilliant.
Who would you put above him?
Well, I'd have to go through and think, really. I think Luke Shaw has been very good, definitely. I think James Justin, whenever he's played, I think he's been great. If you, you know. And I'm trying to think as well. I think... But yeah, he's definitely up there, 100%.
Would you put Alonso up there?
Well, I don't think he's played enough, really, to say, you know, one of the best of the season. But whenever he has played, I think he's played well, 100%. Or at least whenever he's played under Tuchel, he's played well.
Well, I don't think you got to look in at under Lampard. But now Chilwell's not getting much of a look in.
No. I mean, considering you spent what, like, quite a bit of money on Chilwell. I can't remember how much it was.
30 million, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, according to Transfermarkt, it was 45 million you spent on him.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know. And don't get me wrong, I like Chilwell. But if he's not playing, then, you know. Like, 45 million is a lot of money. I mean, we were saying the same about Van der Beek.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money to have sat on your bench.
Yeah, I agree. But then you could be saying that about any other player. You could be saying that about, oh, you can't have Kante on the bench. He cost you 35 million when we've got Jorginho and Kovacic on the pitch. Someone has to miss out.
Yeah, but the difference is you didn't buy them this summer.
Okay. Fair enough, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a tight race for top four, I will say, between Chelsea and West Ham, I think. Yeah, you've definitely got two good teams pushing for it. But I mean, I don't know. We'll wait and see. I mean, just looking at run-ins, you know, come the end of the season, West Ham do have a hard run-in. I mean, they've still got Man United, Arsenal, Leicester, Everton, and a big game against Chelsea to come in their last few games. Whereas Chelsea, you know, they've got Leicester, they've got Man City, obviously that game against West Ham. But apart from that, they've not really got too many games that they shouldn't be winning. I mean, obviously they've got the Champions League and the FA Cup to contest with as well. But in terms of the run-ins, just purely on the league, you'd have to say Chelsea definitely do have the advantage. I think definitely the game on the 24th of April will be crucial to see who qualifies for Champions League.
Certainly.
Speaking of the Champions League, we'll move on to the midweek Champions League games. I mean, we're a little bit in, so I mean, we'll speed up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, where do you want to go first?
Juve Porto.
I mean, I think it's mental, really, that Porto lost, drew, and won that game. What a mental game this was. Eh?
Yeah, I think it's one of the all-time classics. It's a very exciting match. From start to finish. 2 hours of brilliant football. Mainly from Porto.
Yeah. I will say, credit to Pepe and Mbemba. Pepe especially. I mean, Pepe's what, 38?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's still able to mark out one of the best in the world out of the Champions League tie, essentially. Like, you know...
Do you give any credit to Marchesin?
Well, yeah, definitely... 100%, he made some very important saves. But I just want to give Pepe some credit as well, because he put in an absolute shift at 38 as well. He put in an absolute shift in defence, especially when, you know, he's coming up against one of the best in the world at the moment.
I'm sure he would have known how to work him out from, you know, training ground.
Well, yeah, but knowing how to stop someone and actually stopping someone is a completely different thing, especially when it comes to Ronaldo.
Well, yeah, but they would have been working on it in the training ground, wouldn't they?
Oh, right. Oh, but yeah, but I'm sure every club works out to mark Ronaldo on the training ground.
Yeah, but
I don't think there's any teams what are like, we won't bother working on, you know, working out stop Ronaldo.
What I'm saying is, when they were at Real Madrid, you always have, you know, mock scenarios, don't you? Where it could be like heading training or whatever, and you'll put Pepe against Ronaldo.
Mm.
That's what I'm kind of saying. He would know how to mark Ronaldo from that.
I know what you're saying. I'm just, you know, just trying to give him a bit of credit. I mean, he's 38 years old. You know, it's one thing, you know, to have that brain, to know how to stop him. And it's another thing to actually implement it in an actual game environment. But, you know, yeah, it was just a brilliant performance from Porto, really. I think, you know, a lot of people have been very critical of Juve. I think that, you know, the decision to sack Sarri last season wasn't a good one. I think, you know, especially considering you're looking at where they are now, you know, they're currently 10 points off of Inter Milan at the top of the table. I don't think Pirlo's improved them at all. And I feel sorry for Sarri as well, because it's the second club where he's been sacked after winning a trophy and be replaced by an ex-player who hasn't had as good a season as him. But, yeah, I mean, with the exception of one or two players, this Juventus team just looks stale.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, before Sarri was sacked, he said that this team is uncoachable. So, Pirlo has... It's going to take a miracle worker to work with them, because I assume there's a lot of egos involved, because someone like a Ronaldo feels like, you know, it doesn't matter who's in charge. You know, I'm one of the best in the world. I can win games, you know, whether it's Pirlo in charge or, you know, Zidane or whatever.
Mm.
And then you've got players like Rabiot, who's come from PSG. Players like, my mind's gone blank. Chiellini, you know, Chesney, all of those that have won the titles before or been successful elsewhere, you know, they don't want to hear about some amateur manager and, you know, his alleged tactics. You know, they now work out between themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you're looking at the best player who, you know, who for Juventus that game, it was Chiesa, who came from Florentina. You know, who wasn't at a big club.
Yeah, I'd also argue Artur and Cuadrado.
Hmm.
But, you know, everyone else, pretty shite.
Yeah, I mean, it's Porto's game plan, you know, was executed to perfection, really. You know, they managed to mark out, you know, the key players, and yeah, it was, you know, even with going a man down for, you know, a good 70 minutes when you add on extra time, it was just a brilliant performance, and Oliveira managing a bag of brace. I mean, I definitely didn't expect Porto to be through to Champions League quarters.
I thought Musa Moraga also played very well.
Mm.
Very good hold-up play up top, and made, he was crucial in getting the two goals for Porto.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I just think overall it was just a brilliant team performance from Porto.
The way the match was won for Porto with that free kick was beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a stunning free kick. I mean, it wasn't the best goal in the Champions League round of 16. I mean, we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, it was a beautiful free kick.
Should we get into that then?
We can do if you want. It was almost on. If Messi had scored that penalty, I almost had a feeling that they would have gone on to win that. Almost. Because they'd have only needed two goals. But you know, it's not like it hasn't happened before with Barcelona and PSG, I'll say that. But you know, it's just mental that he can miss a penalty, can miss it, but score that fucking screamer. Like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Sensational player. But I felt like this tournament marked the end of an era and the birth of a new one. You know, Ronaldo and Messi crashing out in the round 16, and we see the teams of Mbappe and Haaland going forward.
Yeah, and this is the first time that neither Ronaldo nor Messi have been in the Champions League quarterfinals since 2005, is it?
Yeah, Ronaldo wasn't involved.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just been, like you say, you know, like I felt blessed to be part of the Ronaldo Messi generation. I thought, you know, oh my, you know, we've had it so good, because most generations you get one standout player, if that. You know, you think of Pele, you think of Maradona, you think of Cruyff. But just as it looks like Ronaldo and Messi are winding down the careers, you've got Mbappe and Haaland really soaring at the moment. So yeah, it's we're definitely lucky to be living in this era, I will say, for football.
Yeah, looking forward to exciting times. And the fact that it's not even their peaks yet, that is scary.
Oh, yeah, you've got to think about, you know, in 6 or 7 years' time, what are they going to both be like?
The scary thing is, they could actually be a partnership at PSG.
Well, was PSG one of the clubs that Arlen said he'd consider?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, yeah, that would be frightening. I mean, I can't see it personally. But if that did happen, I mean, PSG would just win everything. Like, there'd be no football that had to be played.
Yeah. Well, his buyout clause is only $66 million. And Mbappe, I think you'd have to go into the extremely extortionate, you know, bank.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we could be looking at the, you know, Mbappe or Haaland later on being the first £1 billion player. Would that genuinely surprise you?
No.
With the way that football inflation is just grown rapidly over the past 10 years. Like,
no, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
I think
she spent £1 billion or euros, dollars, whatever, on a player.
Mm. Aye. I mean, it's a scary thought, definitely. But yeah, yeah, and I think in terms of Haaland, at least, you know, I think Dortmund fans have to appreciate him next season, because after that season, that's when his release clause comes into play, and I think I'd definitely put quite a bit of money on him going to Man City. But you know, that's just a guess. But yeah, I mean, is there all else you want to say about this Barca team, this game? You know, I mean, Barca are fucked. I mean, I don't know if you've watched HITC Sevens' video on Barcelona's finances. If anyone hasn't, I would definitely recommend that. But they're in deep shit, I'll say that.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Yeah, I do watch HITC Sevens, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the over £1 billion in debt, and most of that needs to be repaid in a couple of months, right?
They're owned by fans, which... And nobody's going to want to take over that. Because not only you got to buy the club from the fans, you got to assume the debt.
Inherit the debt, yeah, that's the problem. It's not great, I will say that. But, you know. Yeah, I mean, is there what else you're wanting to add on to that? We'll move on to the other Champions League game.
Well, I was just wondering what happens if, you know, Barca can't pay. Do they get liquidated?
In theory, yes, but I can't see that happening. A club as big as Barcelona, a business as big as Barcelona, you know, I'm sure they'd be able to figure out some sort of contract, like payment plan or something like that.
Yeah, but you said they got to pay it back in a few months.
Well, yeah, that's when they have to pay it back, but I'm sure they'll be able to figure something out. I'm sure they'll be able to agree something with the banks. Because they are a big business. If it was any other club in world football, besides from maybe Real Madrid or Manchester United, I'd say they're fucked. But because it's Barcelona, I think they'll definitely be able to figure something out.
United's fiscal debt keep getting it. Sometimes it drops and then sometimes it goes up.
Exactly.
Their debt went up 18% this season.
Exactly, and they're not in any financial trouble, are they?
Yeah, they are.
Well, no, not as much as Barcelona. No one's talking about Man United getting liquidated.
Yes, yeah, it's 700 million.
Yeah, but they're fine because they're able to work stuff out with banks, aren't they? Man United aren't going to get liquidated, and I doubt that Barcelona will either.
I don't think it's fair for a club to get their debt increased. That's not paying it back, is it?
Well, no, I mean, that's another argument, isn't it? But, like, you know, it's a business. And if banks consider that business reliable in terms of giving money back, they'll continue to give them debts.
Hang on, I got that wrong. Their debt has grown from 270.5 million, which is now 474.1 million. That's 133%.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a difference between debt and manageable debt. Like, you know, say you buy a house, you're going to get a mortgage for it, aren't you? And I mean,
that's not manageable debt if it's gone up. Over 100%.
Well, you got to consider, you know, Man United's income. You know, there's a difference between debt and manageable debt. And I think as long as they have a payment plan or, you know, some sort of plan in terms to pay it back, then it's manageable debt. which I'm sure they will do, because the banks wouldn't let them take out that big of a loan without any some sort of plan.
City are debt free.
Well, yeah, because, you know, whenever they're running low, they just top up the oil. But yeah, I mean, speaking of City, they also played on Wednesday night. They ran riot on Southampton. I mean, you know, just touch on this really. I mean, you know, Southampton, they put up a brave performance going forward, I will say. I think they're managing to get two goals. I think they did well. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was just a dominant City performance. There's not really too much to say about it, is there?
No, but Hasenhüttl was praised by Pep Guardiola for going to the Etihad and actually trying to play football.
Yeah, and I mean, but Hasenhüttl's comments were saying, you know, oh, I'd rather get beat the way we did than sit back and get beat 1-0. Like,
yeah,
you
know,
you'd rather get spanked than lose 1-0. Like, I don't get that.
Well, you don't want all that hard work in keeping the ball out for so long to lose 1-0 than, you know, go out for a win and lose 5-2. Like, you become more heartbroken losing by the one goal, wouldn't you?
Well, at least you can be proud of that. Like, you know, like, yeah, I'd be more annoyed if we conceded 5 goals. Like,
I can see an argument for either, but I would definitely feel heartbroken if, you know, I put 100% into my back line, you know, trying to keep the ball out of net and they go and score late on, you know, all that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because we did that against City, I think in 2019, because that was the season where City and Liverpool were neck and neck. And we lost that 1-0 because ball went about 2 centimetres over the line or something. But I'd be far happier with that sort of performance. I'm obviously disappointed, but I'd be more disappointed if we got spanked, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah, but wouldn't you feel proud to have lost 5-2 because your team actually went out there, they got some goals, they did concede, but they made a game of it?
Well, we were making a game of it. I mean, if it weren't for those 2 centimetres, we would have got a point. Like, it's stupid to, you know, open yourselves up for City because they're going to spank you.
I don't know. Leicester did it and they beat him 5-2, so you can
see. Yeah, but Leicester's third in the league.
I know, but there's
more. I'm not talking about, you know, like, or when Leicester or United or teams like that play City. I'm on about when teams like us and Southampton play City.
Yeah, I can see your point. I can also see his point.
I mean, you know, it was just typical City running riot, really. I mean, you know, Southampton.
It should have been 5-3, actually.
What's that?
Should have been 5-3.
Yeah, it probably should have.
Not much, but it does look a bit more. A lot better for Saints.
They're definitely improved from the 9-0, I will say. But, I mean, there's not really much lower you can go from a 9-0, really.
10-0.
Well, yeah, but you can say that about all, can't you? Like, you know, if you lost 50-0, you'd be able to say that. Like,
a Madagascan team once lost 249-0.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing about that. I mean, like, could you imagine that? Like,
No, it's because it was a big like playoff thing in Madagascar for their title. The score was 1-0 and they got what they felt was a stonewall penalty. Ref said no. So in protest for the rest of the game, they just booted the ball in her net.
Oh no, I've just looked it up. It was 149-0, not 249-0.
Yeah, The previous record was Bon Accord and Arbroath 49-0. Is that correct?
36-0.
Damn it.
See,
I can get the teams right.
You got the right team, to be fair.
Thank you. Largest score internationally is Australia beating American Samoa 31-0. Archie Thompson got 13 goals.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that. Because didn't they win the first game recently or something, American Samoa?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think they just won their first ever game recently.
Jesus. Probably in like the Island Cup or whatever it is over there.
Yeah, like something like that.
They might be qualifying for a World Cup anytime soon.
Oh, no, I highly doubt that.
New Zealand are the first oceanic side, aren't they? Because Australia play in Asia, don't they? They went 2010 World Cup, yeah.
Yeah, I remember him going to World Cup, but I didn't know they played in Asia.
What, you don't know Australia have to go through Asia?
Well, no, I didn't know they were part of the Asian... Like, whatever the Asian version of UEFA was.
It's AFC, it is.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, Israel's under UEFA, so...
No, they only qualify because... They only do Asia because they absolutely bollock everyone else in the Oceanic.
Yeah.
It's just to give everyone else a chance. And the usual qualifiers from Asia are Australia, Japan, Iran... And then you get a wild card usually. Saudi Arabia.
And North Korea.
Oh my god, they qualified once, didn't they, 2010?
Yeah. Jesus. And they won the World Cup, according to their propaganda.
That's hilarious. What match are we on now?
We'll move on to Europa League. Where do you want to start?
Milan.
Right. Yeah, it was... I mean, it's definitely a tight game, I'll say that. I'm happy for Amad Diallo getting his first Man United goal.
That's what they're going to talk about. I knew it.
Well, you know, I mean, it's an important, you know, moment in his career. You know, he's scoring his first senior goal, and it's for Manchester United in the Europa League against AC Milan.
Sky. It's like the lad only played 70 minutes of professional football before signing for 34 million.
Oh, yeah, no, don't get me wrong. I still think it was a fucking stupid figure. You know, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it's still a big moment in his career. He can't help the fee, can he?
Oh, that's true. It was a clever header, but I feel like AC Milan should have won. That goal written off for Kessié, that was fucked.
Oh, yeah. It was a... What a fucking screamer that was, to be fair. I think it was definitely it could have gone either way, I'll say. And I think United really started off slowly. They had to grow into this game. AC Milan probably should have won it, I do think, definitely.
Got a late equaliser through Simon Kier. He's been all over Europe. I think he was at Fenerbahce, Sevilla.
Yeah, it was a thingy, wasn't it, as well? Last season. It was at Atalanta, wasn't it?
What's the same one here? I don't think so.
Yeah, I thought he was there on loan.
What, have you just looked?
Well, no, this is just off the top of my head. I could be wrong.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He played 5 games.
Hmm.
He's been to Palermo, Wolfsburg, Roma, Lille, Fenerbahce, Sevilla, Atalanta, Milan.
Hmm. He's definitely been all over, I will say. And I think he's a good player as well. Obviously getting a goal. Yeah, it was definitely a very tight game. Man United did have to grow into that game.
Henderson made a big mistake in that.
Yeah, I mean, that was poor keeping. I can't defend that.
Were the other games? Oh yeah, Tottenham made easy work of Zagreb. Didn't really have to get out of second gear for that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, another Kane brace. You know, a rotated Spurs team. You know, just putting a good performance. Didn't really have to do that much against, you know, a Zagreb team which are good. But they're not, you know, they're not at the level of Spurs. So,
they used to have Danny Olmo, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I remember that. I used to sign him all the time on Football Manager last season. Yeah, I mean, they do create some good young talent. I mean, I know that the keeper Livakovic, I know he's been touted by a few bigger clubs. Yeah, they do tend to create a few decent young prospects to Zagreb.
I remember we wanted a Ante Koric from there, but I think he went to Roma and then it didn't work out.
Well, I mean, that's you know, what happens, really. I mean, it's always a gamble when you get players from, you know, the non-top 5 leagues, they're always a gamble.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, not really too much to add about that game, really. I mean, we're going to talk about Arsenal and Olympiakos really quickly. I mean, Sokratis coming up against his former club. And yeah, it was just a good Arsenal performance, really, night and day from the one against Burnley, really. It was just dominant.
Yeah, but at the same time, another moment when they're pissing around at the back cost them a goal. And, you know, that could be crucial in the second leg, even though they have got the 2 away goals.
Yeah, I mean, in the away leg, Olympiakos would have to score 3. So it does look like Arsenal are probably headed through.
Yeah, it only takes one more moment like that where they just piss around at the back and, you know, that's them conceding an away goal and, you know, big trouble. Oh my God, Mario Mandzukic used to play for Dinamo Zagreb.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I mean, it shouldn't be a surprise, really. I mean, he's Croatian, so.
Yeah, it's true. Mark Viduka, Jesus.
Yeah.
Do you remember him? Actually, he might be too young.
I vaguely remember the name. He were thingy, wasn't he? Were you at Sunderland?
I was at Middlesbrough and Leeds.
Ah, right.
He's really good at Leeds.
I thought he was Northeast.
He's really good with Australia. Him and Harry Kewell up top.
Yeah.
With Tim Cahill midfield.
But are there any other Europa Leagues you want to touch on, or we move on?
Well, Sparta Prague are trying to get rid of the British sides as they go through, aren't they?
Ah, yeah, that's a good point. I'd like Slavia Prague. I think they're a decent side. And yeah, I mean, they knocked out Leicester, so I mean, you know, they must be doing somewhat right. Rangers managing to bag the away goal from an unlikely scorer, Hollander. But yeah, they were probably second best here, Rangers, and probably lucky to come away with a draw, I'll say.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game on Thursday at Ibrox.
Yeah, and I mean, considering that Rangers have already won the Scottish Premiership, it's been confirmed now, you'd think they'd be going all out for Europa League. Yeah,
that's very true.
Considering they've not got all else to play for at the moment. I mean, I don't know if they're still in Scottish Cup or whatever. I have no idea. Right.
The final was Livingston versus St. Johnstone, I believe.
All right.
Yeah. Not the most exciting. I think it went to extra time. Someone won it 1-0. But you have Old Firm. Is it the next weekend or the following? Won't want to rest anyone there. You're playing for pride there.
Well, yeah, that is true, to be fair.
And then Celtic might have to do a guard of honour.
Yeah, that would be funny. But yeah, you know, it would definitely be a interesting game going into the second leg. Yeah, so what else you want to touch on?
No.
No? Right, I mean, well, we can discuss Newcastle and Villa. It was one of the most exciting game. Definitely heated up in the last 10 minutes. Ollie Watkins looking like he'd scored his first goal in a bit, but only for it to be ruled an own goal, a Kieran Clarke own goal. And then the 94th minute, Lascelles managing to get the equaliser. That was definitely a kick in the teeth for Villa, and a point that, you know, was definitely needed for Newcastle, considering the other teams around them are starting to pick up wins.
Yeah. Well, given how the other 18 minutes had gone, it was sort of heading towards a draw, so I think, irrespective of the sort of last, you know, sort of 10 minute spell for Villa, I think that was always on the cards.
I think that, yeah, they just weren't good enough, Villa. And I mean, you know, I think, again, you know, I don't want to sit here and call them a one man team, but you definitely felt the, you could tell that Jack Grealish weren't playing. They were definitely missing him.
Yeah, but
you know, they just missed that little bit of thrust. They lacked that.
Yeah, I noticed with Bertrand Traoré, he kept coming back. He wasn't very good that game.
He only lasted for about 20 minutes, didn't he?
I What do you mean?
Traore.
Oh, yeah, he came off, didn't he? Yeah, for Agassi. Yeah, I think he did something to his rear, but it looked pretty bad.
Well, he went into the boards, didn't he, if I remember rightly?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's been any follow-up on that, so I think...
Well, no, it was a clean challenge. It was just unfortunate that he picked up an injury.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know how long he's out for. But, you know, with Grealish still looking like he's going to be out for a little bit. I mean, there was no sign of him at all against Newcastle. You know, that could be another big loss for him. You know, another attacking option that they missed out on.
Maybe they need to play that Louis Barry lad.
Yeah, I mean, it's an option, definitely. I mean, you know, he managed to score, you know, against Liverpool, so he clearly has something about him. And I mean, he was in La Masia for a bit, so.
Yeah, and he shot that Liverpool team.
Yeah.
I've looked up Bowen Traore. It doesn't look like there's been anything cynical.
Well, no, it wasn't. It was a fine challenge. It was just unfortunate that he went into boards. But yeah, I mean, it's not really that much else to say about the game, really. I mean,
there's not much to say about the next game.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was about to say, I'll leave you to this. I mean, yeah, I'm sure you'll have quite a bit to say on it, I'll say.
Well, we dominated the game, but I never felt we got out of second gear. And that's what held us back, I think. Any time we got an opportunity, it went straight to Meslier, and that was... And then, you know, there were a couple hiccups at the back where Leeds got them behind, but I don't think there was anything that... Outside of a shot where... Mendy had to, you know, sort of parry from behind. That was the only sort of chance for them.
Mm.
But, you know, before the game, I was fully expecting 3 points. But thankfully, Everton didn't pick up a win.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just... I just don't get why he changed system. Like, Havertz up front, going to the four at the back. Like, I don't get that.
Well, we are. Well, we can't really afford to play three centre backs when we've only got one. When we haven't got a cover one at the moment.
So, well, surely you've got someone in youth academy.
Look,
yeah, and I mean, you know, if you played Rudiger, Christensen, and Azpilicueta, you've still got Zouma on bench, right?
Yeah. We shouldn't have lined up Tomori.
No. Is there an option to buy there?
Yeah, 25 million.
Yeah, so... Well, I mean, 25 million is probably a decent fee, to be fair, I will say.
I'd rather he stayed, to be honest, but... That's definitely an area we need to strengthen his centre-back cover.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Especially with Thiago Silva not getting any younger.
Mm.
I mean, you've got Malang Sarr who's going to come back from loan.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And he played pretty well against PSG as well.
Mm.
That's true, yeah. But that 0-0 did mark 4 consecutive clean sheets, and Mendy this season has got 19 clean sheets and conceded 18.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, definitely defensively, been very solid, especially with Tuchel coming in. But I do think this performance was probably the worst we've seen Chelsea under Tuchel this season. And it'll be interesting to see, with the Champions League game against Atletico Madrid coming up. And then, you got the FA Cup next weekend. And then, obviously, you've got the international break. And after that, you've got more Premier League games. It'll be interesting to see if that new manager bounce is starting to wear off.
No, I think it was just the players didn't get out of that second gear. Hopefully, that isn't a sign of what's to come, especially when we got Atleti next, because I don't want to get embarrassed against them.
Yeah, I mean, it was a brilliant performance in the first leg, but, the job definitely isn't done. I mean, you only won the first leg 1-0, and Atletico Madrid are a very good side. Top of the Liga by 6 points. It'll be interesting. I'll definitely say that. We'll quickly go over Palace and West Brom. It was a boring game, to be completely honest with you. I think it was just a case of West Brom. They probably had more chances overall, but they didn't have as many good chances as Palace. And, like we say, Palace are just sort of stumbling over the line, as it were. And West Brom, they're down. I think that pretty much seals it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Especially when you look at, they've still got Liverpool, West Ham, Arsenal, Leicester, Chelsea all to play. And they've only won 3 games all season.
Yeah, I feel the teams that are battling relegation are Fulham, Newcastle, Saints.
Really? You don't think Brighton?
Well, no, Brighton are beating Saints at the moment.
Hmm. And then, yeah, they are, as we speak. But
did a Burnley in that fight either. I think they're defensively sound. And, coming off wins. Well, actually, you've had really good results. Draw against Leicester and Arsenal.
Yeah, well, we've only lost one in his last 9, I think. And that were against Spurs away. It's just been a case of too many draws recently. I mean, drawing against Brighton at home, Fulham at home, and a 10-man West Brom at home. Like, that's not good enough. To get 5 points from the last 3 games, I mean, that's, it's brilliant. I mean, that's basically seen as safe. And I mean, when we had 2 points from his first 7 games, I didn't think we'd be safe with 10 games to go, but it looks like we are.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah, definitely.
I'd
say given current form, the fight is between Fulham, Newcastle, Saints.
Yeah, I mean, it could be looking like Newcastle. I mean, with the players, their best 3 players, essentially, Saint-Maximin, Wilson and Almiron, injured for the foreseeable future. Yeah.
Oh, rap. Final game, Fulham, Newcastle.
Yeah, did you not know that?
No.
Yeah, it's a big game, that final game of season. The next sort of few games, next few game weeks are crucial, really, because Newcastle play Brighton in their next game. They also play us coming up. We play Southampton. Fulham. They play Leeds, which, Leeds aren't down there, but it's, a game what they need to be trying to win. It could end up coming out of that Newcastle Fulham game, last game of the season, 100%.
Game was wrapped up by Milivojevic penalty, which was definitely a penalty.
Yeah, it was Stonewall. We can't really have many complaints there. And yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with West Brom, because I can't imagine Sam Allardyce will be managing them next season. So I'll be interested to see what happens with them. You know, whether they end up being like Stoke, where they take a fall, or whether they end up, you know, pushing for promotion next season. It all depends on who they bring in.
I think the worst comparison you can make is like a Hull or a Sunderland.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But I think the problems with them were a lot deeper rooted than what was just happening on the pitch. I think with West Brom, there's not really that sort of like instability and, you know, that negative atmosphere that was around Hull and Sunderland, you know, and like Wigan and, you know, all them sorts, you know. I can't see West Brom getting relegated again. But, you know, what could happen, you know, we'll wait and see.
Should we get into your team?
Please, yes. That first half from us was one of the best first halves I've seen from us this season, honestly. It was brilliant. You know, like I was mentioning against Arsenal, you know, we win the ball high up the pitch, you know, with some pressure from Josh Brownhill, forcing the mistake from Davies. McNeil gets the ball in, comes to Wood on the edge of the box, and he hits it, you know, first time, well, not first time, he takes one touch, and then hits it into the bottom corner. Brilliant goal. And the second goal, oh, what an absolute beauty. I mean, it's definitely up there in terms of goal of the season contenders. I mean, you cannot put it more top bins than that. It was an absolute beautiful strike from Dwight McNeil, who, you know, we want to see more from that from McNeil, you know, hitting it from edge of box, you know, trying more shots, especially if he can produce magic like that. I mean, you know, the fact that he skins Alan and then just puts it top bins from the edge of the box. I mean, you know, if you looked at that goal and didn't know who scored it, you'd have thought it was bloody Messi. I mean, honestly, beautiful.
What would you say is goal of the season?
For us? Or just in general?
Just in general.
I'm trying to think. I'd have to get back to you on that because, you know, there's probably quite a few that I'm forgetting. But I definitely think that's up there. What about you?
It's the Edison to Gundogan goal.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it definitely was a good pass from Edison. I can't lie.
What would be your goal of the season for Burnley?
It probably is that. I mean, it's between that, the Matt Lawton goal against Palace and the Josh Brownhill goal against Millwall, but it probably is that McNeil strike. I mean, he couldn't have put it any more top bins, honestly.
Okay, fair enough.
And I actually know someone who knows Dwight McNeil, and apparently, you know, I don't know how true this is, but apparently the players were told to shoot from range against Pickford. Because, you know, he doesn't do well against shots from... What's that?
They had to change that pretty quick when the goalkeepers were changed.
When Pickford came off, yeah. And, I mean, we did, to be fair. I mean, we took far less long shots when Pickford came off, which was something I noticed. So, you know, it seems like it could be true. And it could have been more as well, easily. Because we hit the post twice. One from a Goodmanson shot from outside of the box, one from a Ben Mee header from a corner. Could have easily been, you know, three or four if those had gone in. Everton get one back about 10 minutes before half time. Calvert-Lewin, you know, he's just a brilliant header of the ball. He's always going to get there. You know, and I thought as soon as that goal went in, my heart sank. I thought, right, bloody hell, we're going to be backed at walls for the rest of the game. But, you know, we kept on with the high pressure. We kept on creating chances, and we deserved to win that game 100%. I think that's basically got us safe now. Most seasons, you only need 34, 35 points to be safe. And we can easily nick 2 points with the games we have left. You know, looking at Southampton, Newcastle, Fulham, Sheffield United, Leeds, we can easily nick 2 points from them. But yeah, I mean, it was just a brilliant all-around performance from us. And Everton looking distinctly average.
Yeah, very underwhelming from Everton. But good news for us, so thank you, Burnley.
Yeah, it was just, you know, they didn't look great. I mean, it was just, as you know, they never really looked threatening at all. I mean, Richarlison did nothing. Iwobi didn't really do anything. I mean, you know, they just didn't really have any sort of, like, you know, like we were talking about Villa against Newcastle, they didn't have any, like, thrust or, you know, any attacking threat. They just felt proper, like, stagnant and sluggish.
You need some favours. You need to beat United and beat West Ham for us.
Well, I mean, we do have a good record at Old Trafford, I will say that.
I know you beat them, what, historically?
Well, I'm on about past few seasons. I mean, I think we've only lost one in his past five at Old Trafford, I think.
I shall have a look.
Something like that.
No, you've lost three of the past five.
What?
Yeah. 2-0, 2-2, 2-0. You won 2-0 last year, and then you lost 1-0 in January.
I swear to remember we have a good record at Old Trafford.
Oh, you're talking about Old Trafford.
Oh, yeah, I'm on about Old Trafford.
Well, you won last year.
Yeah.
Drew 2-2. Drew 2-2 again. 0-0. 3-1. And then 3-0 in 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you can beat them, we'll get a draw. That'd be great.
I'm just thinking back to that bloody 0-0 and an absolutely mental performance from Tom Heaton. But yeah, I mean, you know, we easily could.
What was the name of the dude who scored the 1-0? Was it Robbie Blake?
Yeah, that was Robbie Blake. That was his first game. Robbie Blake's screamer as well.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And Beast saved a penalty. Yeah, it was a great game. But yeah, I mean, we're going off topic a little bit. I mean, is there all else you're wanting to add on to this game, really?
Not really. I thought that first half was very exciting for the neutral.
Mm.
Second half
wasn't.
Not so much, but there were chances there, like you said, the post finish track and that.
I just want to give a shout out to Vidra as well before I say out because I thought he played really well. Yeah, I mean, we'll move on to the Man City game that happened late last night. Well, I said late last night, it was 8 o'clock kickoff. But yeah. Not really that much to talk about, which is a typical City performance. You know, they're just dominant. And
what was a 20-minute spell in the first half where Fulham were right on them?
Well, I guess they were, but they didn't really have any, like, significant chances. Like, I mean, they didn't have a shot on target on it.
In their own half for the majority.
Hmm.
Not many teams that can say they've done that, albeit, you know, 20 minutes and then. I thought they defended really well in that opening 45, and then once second half came, the momentum, you know, having, you know, really grown into game, just went out the window pretty early on. John Stones was a reason for that.
I mean, yeah. I think there's a difference between having possession and having good possession. I don't think Fulham really had good possession.
Well, they say attack is the best form of defence, don't they? And I think the way that they kept them trapped in that, you know, their own half, they weren't going to concede.
Oh, no, they weren't going to concede, but, you know, they weren't, they didn't really carve all out, is what I'm trying to say.
No. Well, Scott Barker did have a good philosophy going into this game, because he wanted to stretch the back three, because he knows that Cancelo likes to go forward and they leave three at the back. So that's why he was getting Loftus-Cheek going forward and, you know, driving wide. So I thought that was a good technique that they implemented.
Didn't work. But, you know, not many teams have made it work against City this season, so...
That's very true.
Apart from that, there's not really that much to discuss, really. I mean, it's just a typical, you know, run-of-the-mill City game for most of it, to be completely honest with you. Right. Apart from that, I don't really think there's much else to discuss this episode, unless there's all else
getting.
What's that?
Lol Pompey.
Oh, they sacked the manager, didn't they?
Did they? I know they lost the final yesterday.
Yeah, I saw they sacked the manager.
Do you know they're owned by an ex-Disney CEO?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're owned by Michael Eisner.
All right. Oh, yeah, because it was the EFL trophy, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Papa John's trophy.
Yeah, and Salford are only going to hold it for one day.
Yeah.
Because they're holding it for one day because the final for this year's tournament is happening today.
Yeah. Sunderland Tranmere. The thing is, being a southerner, that and hating Man United, that final was probably one of the worst things that I could have seen.
Yeah.
Hate Pompey, hate Salford.
Really?
I think most people hate Salford, don't they? I'd like to think so.
Oh, I don't really hate Salford.
What? Yeah, they're in for the class of 92 and a billionaire.
Into the ground. Yeah, I mean, you know, at least, you know, it's not like, yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't mind them.
No, it's just like it's like a Red Bull club in England.
Not really, because I mean, RB Leipzig are essentially just breaking the rules, like, in terms of ownership. Whereas, you know, Salford haven't really done all wrong.
Yeah, but they're not called Red Bull Leipzig.
Yeah, I know, but I'm on about like the 50+1 rule, where all the members of the supporters committee are all Red Bull employees.
All right. Oh, they used to have someone who was really good for him. I can't remember his name.
Who, Leipzig?
Yeah, they used to have a manager before Hasenhüttl and Nagelsmann that was really good. That was it, Ralf Rangnick. He was very good.
Yeah, I agree. Has he done all since?
Sorry?
Has he done all since?
He oversees all the transfers for the Red Bull sport industry, so like the ones that Salzburg does, Leipzig, there's one in Brazil, New York, yeah.
Don't know how he didn't oversee Haaland to Leipzig. I mean, I feel like he should have been sacked for that. I mean, surely that would have been a no-brainer. Like, if he already plays for a Red Bull club, like...
Yeah, but you don't make any money going club to club, do you?
Well, you know, they'd have probably made money if Leipzig had gone far in Champions League or in the league because of him.
Yeah.
And I mean, they barely made any money on Haaland anyway. I swear they only got like 20 million for him.
Yeah. It was a risk. I mean, I only picked him up because I happened to have seen him, you know, score 9 against Honduras.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're getting this player from Mold who barely ever played.
Yeah. I swear, don't they have a brother as well who scored an award recently? Haaland.
I know his dad's a famous footballer.
I swear he has like a brother or a cousin or someone what's just scored a lord as well.
So is that whole family just... Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So the Hazard brothers.
Yeah. Oh, it's his cousin. Oh, what's his full name? Albert Charland has 64 goals in 37 matches for Mulder's youth team.
His name is Albert Haaland.
Albert Tjaaland.
Okay.
TJA Land.
Albert Braut Haaland, and he's Erling Braut Haaland. Born 2004.
I was about to say he's 17, and he's been promoted to the youth team at Mulder.
Shit, that. Okay.
Promoted to senior team, sorry.
Holy crap. Well, I'll keep an eye out on him. Tjaaland, right?
Yeah, I mean, 64 goals in 37 games in youth team. Like...
Jesus Christ. Well, I'll look out for him in, like, a... if there's been a youth tournament or anything.
All right.
Shall we end it on, you know, that note?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that's a good place to end it, right? If you got all you want to plug, Harry?
I'll plug my Twitter at HazardChelseaFC.
Right, and I'll plug mine at IWGPChrisBFC, and you can follow the podcast at AntifootballPod. Right, that is it for us, and yeah, we'll see you up next time.